From Illinois Public Media News, this is 217 Today. I'm Kimberly Schofield. It's Monday, April 21st. Coming up, we'll listen to a conversation with Darius and Catherine Brubeck about their book that follows the path to establishing a jazz education program in apartheid-era South Africa. That story in just a few minutes, but first, these headlines. A single-engine plane crash in Coles County has killed two women and two men from Wisconsin. It happened Saturday in a field along County Line Road near Route 45. The Coles County coroner identified the occupants of the plane as 46-year-old Ross Nelson, 45-year-old Ramey Brundle, 36-year-old Courtney Morrow, and 48-year-old Michael Morrow. All were from Menominee, west of Eau Claire, Wisconsin. There's no word on why the Cessna C-180G airplane crashed. The National Transportation Safety Board and Federal Aviation Administration were on scene investigating the crash site. University of Illinois students gathered in Urbana on Friday to support the right to protest. IPM's Emily Hayes has more.
When free speech is under attack, what do we do?
The U of I's updated rules for expressive activity limit where and when protesters can make noise above a certain level. Matthew Heinrichs is a graduate student. He says the administration quietly changed these policies over the summer, and he thinks they're having a chilling effect for free speech on campus.
Students are really scared that if they step one toe out of line, even when they're trying to follow the policies, that they're going to get in trouble.
University spokesperson Robin Kaler says the sound limit is measured from within a nearby building. She says the goal is to regulate noise disturbances in a consistent manner and that many demonstrations happen without incident. I'm Emily Hayes with IPM News.
Some central Illinois schools have taken steps to ban phone use in school, even as the state considers wider restrictions. Superintendent of Olympia Schools in McLean County, Laura O'Donnell, saw her school tighten phone rules to begin the current school year.
From the second week of school, teachers were saying kids were more engaged, there was more conversation happening.
O'Donnell says students have started trying to skirt the rules, but she says it's still less disruptive than allowing the phones in class. A bill that would require public schools to end phone use during class instruction has passed in the Illinois Senate. Incarceration has long-lasting effects on young people as they grow into adults. That's according to a recent study out of Northwestern University. Mawa Iqbal has more.
Two mental health researchers studied 1,800 youth incarcerated at a juvenile center in Cook County. They followed the youth for about 15 years, and they found young people who spent more time locked up were far less likely to live independently, get an education, or stable employment. In a statement, Professor Linda Teplin, who's one of the researchers, said, "Incarceration isolates youth from their families and communities, and because of that, quote, many youth will never catch up." Researchers say Black and Hispanic boys are more likely to be affected because they are disproportionately incarcerated and stay in the system longer. The researchers say incarceration's negative impact on youth shows just how important early intervention programs are. I'm Mawa Iqbal.
The Fighting Illini softball team lost all three games in its Easter weekend series against Purdue. The Illini traveled to Indiana and lost 3-7 against the Boilermakers on Sunday. That marks their 11th conference loss this season. Illinois' record falls to 18-23 overall in the season and 4-11 in Big Ten conference play. As for their next game, Illinois will host DePaul tomorrow at Eichelberger Field at 4 p.m. Still to come, we'll listen to a conversation with Darius and Catherine Brubeck about their book that follows the path to establishing a jazz education program in apartheid-era South Africa. That story is coming up next on 217 Today, but first, your forecast.
I'm meteorologist Andrew Pritchard with your IPM News forecast for Champaign-Urbana. Your forecast for today, partly cloudy with a high of 65 degrees and a west wind 10 to 20 miles per hour. Tonight, clear skies with a low of 45 degrees, west wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, sunny with a high of 75 degrees, southeast wind 5 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, clear skies with a low of 52 degrees, south wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. And for Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high of 80 degrees and a south wind 5 to 10 miles per hour.
On the next 21st show.
Today, here,
Across the country, around the world, people are standing up and saying enough.
Progressives are energized and hitting the streets to protest President Trump. But some black voters are sitting these demonstrations out. We'll talk about it next time on The 21st Show.
You're listening to 2 in 7 Today. I'm Kimberly Schofield. Playing the Changes, a book by Darius and Catherine Brubeck, follows their path to establishing a jazz education program in apartheid-era South Africa. The Brubecks will spend the week across Champaign and Urbana. They'll give a presentation about their book and share a documentary film about Darius. The world-renowned musician will also be performing later in the week, too. On Wednesday, April 23rd, the Brubecks will give a presentation about their book at the Spurlock Museum in Urbana. I spoke with the Brubecks about how they brought jazz, education, musicians, and students together during a time of discrimination and segregation. In the beginning of the book, it describes what Playing the Changes means when it comes to jazz, but also in relation to some of the work that was done in South Africa. Would either of you mind describing or expanding on that?
We were in South Africa during the major transition. We were there from 83 to 2006. And of course, in 1990, Nelson Mandela came out of prison, and 1994 was the year when everyone could vote, finally. Democracy had arrived. So we'd moved from a government that had laws for all the different races. So we saw we were part of the change.
As far as playing the changes, of course, we're punning on something that's technical in the jazz world. If you take a standard, you know, something that everybody knows, you improvise on the chord changes. You maintain the structure, but you solo on it and you play completely spontaneously. And that's kind of metaphorically what we did in the education system by introducing jazz onto a predominantly white campus, not by law, but in fact, because there were so many barriers for other people in terms of secondary level education, in terms of finance and so forth. Simply bringing so many black students on campus by having a jazz program really brought some, you know, much wider social change. We were kind of playing some changes on the campus and encouraging exactly what the United States of America is officially turning against. I could say diversity, equity, inclusion. It took me a long time to learn why those were considered bad things, but we certainly were doing that. And at the time, I must say that was in line with official American policy and businesses boycotting South Africa and that sort of thing. So we were playing the changes and we were improvising. We were finding allies. We were avoiding legal traps. We were fundraising. We were ducking and diving and then coming out loud and strong. You know, things kept changing, especially during that first 10 years. Mm-hmm. After Nelson Mandela was elected president, everything became a lot easier. And there was kind of a 10-year celebration after that. But the first 10 years, wow.
What prompted the idea to try to bring this type of program into a university there?
I had retained a contact with Professor Christopher Ballantyne, who was the head of the music department at the University of Natal, as it was then called. It's now the University of KwaZulu-Natal. It was really his vision to incorporate a jazz program at the university, and he'd already done it with ethnomusicology. So he contacted me and said, would Darius be interested in applying for a post? The thought right from the very beginning was that if he did accept this music theory post, I mean, he had to apply with a lot of other people. If he got it, Chris Ballantyne's idea and ours, of course, we would find a way of turning it into a jazz position, which we did. It wasn't just a straightforward decision. Once the application process went through and they did invite Darius to take the post, but even then we were a bit doubtful because of, you know, there were kind of boycotts, cultural boycotts, and it looked as though it might extend then to education boycotts. I had a political past, so we kind of connected with big movements, African National Congress and Pan-Africanist Congress, to see what they thought of the idea of our going to South Africa. And they were in a position where they felt they were getting nearer to democracy and that things were going to change. And they wanted people in institutions to be there preparing the way.
Is there something you can share as far as student response? What was that like?
We had a lot of interest instantly. If you introduce a program that people really want and didn't have before, you get national interest, not just local interest. And since we were the only one, we had the advantage of being able to recruit from the whole nation effectively, if people could get there. So there was a very positive reaction. But then one had to deal with various barriers, like having, and this will not translate well into the American system, but like you have SATs in South Africa and in the kind of British model, colonial model world, there's something called a matric exemption, which means you have so many points for courses passed at a high level. Well, we just didn't have Black students at first who had that qualification because of the education being inadequate in the first place. And then as the 80s warmed up, literally schools burning down during riots, it was just too chaotic. So we had to campaign for and achieve adjustments in the educational system and bridging to bring these students onto campus. But it was successful, and I have to stress this, it was successful because the students contributed so much. They had so much to offer as musicians. They were, you know, kind of an interesting social group. And there were a lot of white students who, because of apartheid, you know, never, you know, sat next to a Black person, you know.
An equal situation.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, it started a lot of conversations. And so the student response was hugely positive. But then we had to transform the institution, which, you know, it was a big ship to turn around. But I must say, a little bit of success led to a little bit more. And we built up alliances and networks. And, you know, it sounds like a big claim, an impossible claim, maybe. But we actually did it with the help of a lot of other people. I have to say that.
I just want to clarify the word student, because we recruited musicians that were already quite well known, but who couldn't read music or anything like that. So we had older students. Because they didn't have the right qualifications, they weren't regarded as real students, but we just let them come to everything. And their contribution was that because they were such good players in ensembles, they really helped the students who had all the right qualifications but weren't as good players. So it was a real mixture of both sides gaining something.
Yeah, mutual appreciation, right. Peer-to-peer learning.
Is there something specific that you hope people take away from the talk or the book, Playing the Changes?
Without in any way pretending to have answers or be prescriptive, because we're old. We didn't grow up with the internet, things like that. Culture changes and evolves over a lifetime. But with all those disclaimers, we hope this will inspire people now, especially in America, to find out how they can play the changes.
Jazz has been music, certainly in South Africa, that was for the struggle, as they called it. There was a slogan which said, jazz for the struggle and the struggle for jazz, which, of course, jazz today is no longer popular music as such. It'll always be there like poetry or something, but it'll never be huge. But I think, as Darius says, we want to inspire people to try and speak out and play their music.
Find their communities.
I mean, jazz is such a, I suppose, having started off really too as a kind of music of freedom, really.
The Brubecks will give a presentation of their book, Playing the Changes, on Wednesday, April 23rd at 5 p.m. at the Spurlock Museum in Urbana. And Darius will perform at Uncorked at Krannert on Thursday, April 24th at 5 p.m. That's it for today. 2 and 7 Today is produced by Stephanie Mosqueda. Reporting today contributed by Reginald Hardwick, Emily Hayes, Braden Fogerson, Mawa Iqbal, Jim Meadows, and Kimberly Schofield. Music by the Kilbourne Alley Blues Band. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. I'm Kimberly Schofield. 2 and 7 Today is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening, stay safe, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.